Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 9th of May, Anno Domini 2015, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. First, very, very, very special thanks to a friend of the show, Jerry Seward, who got the Soundbites website back up. It was up at 3 in the morning when I was doing stuff, and then at 10 it wasn't, and now it is again, and that's entirely my fault, and Jerry has been kind enough to get it all working, so I'm thrilled and delighted that he has done that. sorry. Also, for those of you who've been, I'll be polite and say, asking me when Ask Nick is coming back up. It's sort of up right now as a news site. I'm in the process of doing all kinds of things to it. There's going to be reviews and rants and everything on there that there used to be. But right now, and there will be always news, so you could go there and check out the news right now at AskNick.com. And I'll get the rest of it up as I go along, but I finally figured out what I want to do with it, and it's happening. And now to the real news.
So you thought you'd had free time after you retired.
Oh, please. I've had so little free time.
You're never busier until after you retire.
Yeah. Yeah, a friend of mine said, "Where have you been this last 8 months?" And I started to recount it, and I thought, that can't be all one person. It just can't.
You've got one of those clones around, do you?
Yeah, exactly. Orphan, yes. All right, since Windows 98, the second Tuesday of every month has seen Microsoft issue a slew of updates to eager users. With Windows 10, those days are coming to an end. Microsoft will become a 24/7 update machine. Once or sometimes twice monthly updates make a lot of sense. It makes it easy for users to update their PCs once a month. The logic goes, and people are more likely to apply the critical patches. But thanks to background updates, and more importantly, hackers who aren't going to sit around waiting for Microsoft to stick to a schedule, the company is moving to a 24/7 update cycle with Windows 10. At the Ignite conference, Microsoft announced its change to an update system that will push patches to users as soon as they're ready. There will still be two options, a slow ring, which gets patches in a few consolidated bundles, and a fast ring, which receives patches as soon as they're available. But either way, Microsoft retains the ability to get the more important security updates and bug fixes to its users in a timely way, and it might just have killed Exploit Wednesdays. Linux admins and users have had this for decades, so it's a proven method of upgrade, but many Windows admins who have been burned by bad updates don't like it because they want to test updates in their own environments before pushing them out to their end users. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is No More Patch Tuesday. And your choices are, thank goodness, it was never a big deal for me, this is bad for my company, and wait, Windows has patches? So far we have 21 voters. The majority of you feel it was never a big deal for you. Six of you think, thank goodness. Four of you, of course, voted for wait, Windows has patches. And apparently nobody actually works who's answered the poll yet. But I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you go to the forum, head down on the right-hand side of the page, and you'll probably have to scroll down under fascinating stuff. There's the forums. The second forum, of course, on the list is the poll discussion. And the first item under the poll discussion this week is 9 May 15. No More Patch Tuesday. There are already four posts there so far. Please feel free to join in on that discussion. And also, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
Now, is this for all updates or just Windows 10 updates?
It appears to be Windows 10, but...
Because there's one more reason. Businesses will stay at Windows 7.
Well, right. Well, but isn't Windows 7...
Mainstream support has extended has expired, but extended support is still running for Windows 7.
Right.
And they didn't bother with Windows 8 anyway.
Well, yeah, Windows 8 mainstream support is still out there, but extended support, by the way, for those of you who don't know what these things mean, extended support means your company paid for it. If you're just an individual, you're SOL, yeah. Severely out of luck is what that means.
Yeah, severely.
Severely out of luck. Windows 7, however, is still... No, Windows 7 is done with mainstream support. Yep. No more Windows 7 support. No more updates. certainly no more security updates for you Windows 7 people.
It's hard to believe that Windows 7 has been out that long.
Well, yeah,
I'm
kidding.
5-6 years, is it
yeah.
now? Yeah.
I had somebody with a computer with Windows XP and wanted to know why they keep getting infected.
Yeah.
I go, because there's no more support. Well, it's not that old. I says,
it's only 15 years old.
It's been discontinued a decade ago. It can't be that bad. It still works good. Yeah, it works good, and it still lets a lot of stuff in.
Yep. When my father-in-law passed, I went to set up his computer so they could be sold, you know, D-BAN and all of that stuff. But I booted him up to make sure I could get off all the things that he had on him, because God knows he never had any sort of security on it, which makes sense because they were Vista machines. Which explains why he was always complaining that they were full of junk. Windows 10 will have that. Now, back in the day when I was the system administrator, I liked having the once-a-month updates because my friend Dave, who was my minion, could then download all of the updates, check them, against our core image, and if they, you know, put out the ones that worked and not put out the ones that didn't. Now it's going to be a very different world out there, and I feel bad for folks like Dave who are still involved in that, but we'll see.
Linux
people have been doing that for decades.
And Apple releases updates when they're ready.
The same thing. Yep. But
which has been an enterprise criticism of Apple. We never know when an update's coming.
Right.
Well, when we fix something, we update it.
Right.
We don't
right.
wait for the bad guys to find it.
Right. Well, sometimes you do.
Sometimes you do, but yeah.
but generally speaking, yeah. And one of the issues, though, is that the incidence of bad updates is much lower on a Mac and even much lower on Linux than it has been on Windows.
Well, and one of the things I've always thought is it's been weird on these cycles, is that one month there's like three or four updates, and the next month there's 20 or 30.
Yeah.
You wait until there's 20 or 30 updates that you're fixing at once. Who knows how that's going to interact with everything else?
Well, and that's just
it. If you do one or two updates at a time, it's less likely that it's going to screw something up.
And that's part of the reason neither the Mac nor Linux has had the kind of issues that Apple has had. When you're updating one thing, you can do a lot of testing to make sure it works with everything that's out there.
You're right.
So, right. And of course, every time you make a change, now you have to test it all over again, and maybe it screws up another update, and you have to do it all over again. It's ridiculous.
That's sort of been part of troubleshooting and diagnostics for years, is you change one thing and see what happens. You don't change six things, then you don't know which one did it and which one did something else.
Right, exactly. So we'll see how that all works for Windows. Hopefully it will also mean that Windows has fewer bad updates. So we'll see as time goes on. All right, to the phones.
What? You say there's so much more complexity in Windows and Windows apps. You never know.
Right.
When are they going to get rid of the registry?
Oh, please. Oh, please. All right, to the phones. Our first caller this week, Linda from Greece, New York. Hi, Linda. What's up?
Hi. I got a question for you. On my Android phone, I get my mail. and the little three little dots I can move to whatever folder I want. I've got an Android tablet, but there's no, I go into the three dots and there's nothing it says move to. And I've got several accounts. How do I do that?
Are you using the Google Mail app on the tablet or the website?
No, I'm using the Gmail app that came with it.
And is your Android tablet at the same version that your phone is at?
Good question.
Thanks.
My Android tablet is a Galaxy Tab 4 10.1. It's a fairly, I guess it's a new one. I don't know.
Pretty
That's
new.
A good question. How do I do that? How do I find that
is
out?
Is there a check for updates button somewhere?
Yeah. What you do is you go into the settings.
Now, are you talking about my phone or my tablet?
Well, either one. They're the same operating system.
Okay.
So you go into settings.
Okay.
At the very bottom of the list of things you can do in settings, it will either say about phone or about tablet.
Uh-huh.
And if you go into that, one of the choices will be updates. I think it's a software updates. And
oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's where you can check. Without seeing it.
I think they're both running KitKat right now.
Okay.
So it could be possible one is set for IMAP and one is set for POP. Because POP doesn't have folder options. You can't move through folders.
Were they both set up by the same person?
Well, no, I was having trouble with my iPad, so I got an Android because of having trouble with it. It's fairly new.
All right.
I'm trying to say
when you go into your mail. And on the left, there's those three little lines.
Right.
And you click on that. What do you see?
Okay, I just got rid of it, too, because I was, okay, Gmail. What do I see? I don't see move to. I don't see anything. I don't see anything that relates to mail at all.
That's not what I asked. What I asked is, what do you actually see?
Okay. I've got it. Okay, three little dots. Okay, I'm there now. It says change labels, mark not important, mute, print, report spam, report phishing. That's all I see.
Wow. That sounds like a very old version of the software.
Okay.
So check to see if there are updates for that, and the easiest way to do that.
Okay, that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing right now.
Okay, good. Check to see if there are updates. If there are, make sure you're updating to the latest.
Okay, let's see. Okay.
And that will. Well, we can't wait while you do that on the phone, Linda. But try that because it sounds like you've got a very old version of the software on your tablet.
Okay. One other question. What do you think of 5.0 on your Galaxy 5?
I love it.
So my girlfriend wants to know, and I said, I'm a little scared because I've heard a lot of people say it's bad.
Oh, no. I love it.
Is it different? Did they change the way things look?
Very little. Well, the look is different. They've got a new set of icons.
And people hate that.
People hate that. They think it's different. But it works almost identically, and it's a little faster, which I really like, and I've been very happy with it.
Yeah, it changed the background on mine. It's about the only thing it did. But yeah. Like you say, it updated a lot of the apps and that, and I like it a little bit better.
Yep.
Okay, because I was at Best Buy, some guy came in and said, 5.0 really screwed up my phone. I went, oh, geez.
Well, yeah, it did change the icons. And there are people who can't handle that. I get it.
Okay, thank you very much, guys.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you, 19 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by the Eastman Community Music School. With an extensive jazz education program, the Eastman Community Music School offers school year and summer jazz lessons, ensembles, and classes for students of all levels and backgrounds. The community school has been a part of the Eastman School of Music since 1921 and is located on Gibbs Street in the heart of the Cultural District. For more information, you may visit them online at esm.rochester.edu/community.
Expensive medical bills,
company layoffs,
student loan payments I couldn't afford.
Whatever your situation, an NFCC agency can help you find real solutions to get your finances back on track. Take the first step to sharpen your financial focus and call your local NFCC agency at 855-3-SHARPEN. That's 855-374-2773. Or visit us online at sharpentoday.org.
A public service message from the National Foundation for Credit Counseling and the Sharpen Alliance.
Boogaloo Joe Jones, Jimmy Smith, Soul Live, Grant Green, James Brown, Melvin Sparks, Ron Levy, Bobby Blue Bland, Jimmy McGriff, Charles Kennard, New Cool Collective, The Awakening, Clarence Wheeler and the Enforcers, Eddie Jefferson.
Join Chuck Ingersoll for the Soul Jazz Spectrum, Sunday nights at 9, and hear all this and more only on Jazz 90.1 and Jazz901.org.
Ramsey Lewis, Eddie Roberts, Cannonball Adderley, Eddie Harris, Young Holt.
My favorite thing about music is it's reliable. It's always there.
And it just helps me cheer up other people.
There's nothing to worry about when you do music. You're just having fun.
When I'm playing it, I'm like, wow, this is me.
And the sound just increases around you and you just become immersed in it. You become one with it.
When you play music, you are playing life.
Whatever music means to you, just play.
Brought to you by the NAMM Foundation.
As a veteran of the United States military, I can finally get the opportunity to enjoy special events, things that we couldn't afford, thanks to VetTix.
Every empty seat at a concert, a game, or a play is a missed opportunity to say thanks to a veteran and service member. We can give our veterans a special event where they too can create their own cherished memories. Visit vettix.org. Find out how you can make a difference in a veteran's life.
Jazz 90.1, streaming online worldwide at jazz901.org.
Ready to become a member of Jazz 90.1? It's easy to do, and it feels so good. Just call 966-5299. That's 966-JAZZ. Or pledge securely online at jazz901.org. And remember to check if you work for a company that matches donations. This could double or even triple your pledge. Anytime is a good time to become a member of Jazz 90.1. Remember, you can only deduct contributions to charitable organizations if you itemize deductions on your Schedule A Form 1040.
Jazz 90.1 weather.
Uncommonly warm and even a little bit on the muggy side today across Rochester, Western New York, and the Finger Lakes, with sunshine giving way to a few clouds. I can't rule out a stray shower thunderstorm later into the afternoon, mainly west of Rochester. The high temperature again well into the upper 80s. We should be into the middle and upper 70s lakeside. Tonight's mostly cloudy, maybe a shower, thunder shower. Overnight low temperatures into the low and mid 60s, very mild to be sure. Tomorrow for Mother's Day, mostly cloudy, a shower, thunderstorm, the high temperature in the upper 70s. I'm meteorologist Josh Nichols for Jazz 90.1.
Currently, we've got mostly cloudy skies, 84 degrees out at the airport, and 89 here at member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, my name's Rick Petrie.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edray.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Every time I hear Rick Petrie's voiceover like that, I always want to ask how his dish is.
Okay.
Oh.
Back to the news.
Yeah, really.
Many of us have a distant memory of discs arriving in your mailbox for free, a whiny noise that sounded like it was coming from an alien drone, and thinking, I've got mail. But perhaps you're one of the 2.1 million people who still have AOL dial-up service and actually pay for it. AOL's quarterly earning report, published Friday, revealed discreetly that 2.1 million people are still dialing up and paying AOL, around $20 a month for the privilege of accessing the internet. Dial-up is infernally slow. It's about as narrow band as a contemporary connected mortal could imagine, and far beyond anything they could tolerate. Just to compare, in January, the FCC redefined broadband as 25 megabits per second, though the average speed in the U.S. is 10 megabits per second. Dial-up is 56 kilobits per second, and as a quick refresher, kilo-anything is over 1,000 times smaller, or in this case, slower, than mega-anything. About 70% of Americans have broadband at home, according to a survey from the Pew Internet Research Project. So who might these people be? An obvious group might be those for whom $20 a month is simply all they can afford. They might not be able to stretch their budget to bundled cable packages or fancy computers. AOL offers, in their minds, a good deal. It could also be that many of these people are in rural areas that have not served, that are not served by any broadband provider. Not all AOL dial-up subscribers actually pay for it. Some have been induced to stay by freebies when they threaten to leave. There are, though, some who are on a free trial. Now, yes, they're actually joining as if, for them, Kurt Cobain is still alive. However, odd as it might be to conceive, for some people, AOL dial-up is still synonymous with the internet. Why, only the other week, a California man received a $24,000 AT&T bill, later rescinded, that appeared to be for his AOL dial-up use. Internet arrangements are not dissimilar to marital ones. Sometimes what happens on the inside isn't necessarily what people see on the outside. Just as with the most peculiar marriages, at least some of these people use AOL dial-up must be happy with it, mustn't they? Are you one of the 2 million people still using AOL? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
I want to know how many people, how many of that that 2.1 million are paying for it and not using it, paying for it without realizing it. It was on their credit card bill. They've been paying every month, and they've just forgotten about it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. How about the other one? Remember Prodigy?
Prodigy,
I remember.
Yeah.
I have a wall of a cloth hanging with all kinds of pins on it, mm-hmm. and one of them is for Prodigy.
Some people
that I'd gotten 100 years ago.
Yep. Some people, and we run into in our office every now and then, they still have an AOL email address because that's what they started with.
Right.
And so they think they have to still pay for AOL. They don't realize that you don't have to pay for AOL right. to get to the AOL website if you're paying for another internet service.
Right.
And especially during the AOL Time Warner merger for a while, where if you got Roadrunner Internet, you got AOL for free anyway. When that unmerged, right. A lot of people were still paying for AOL because they thought they had to.
Right, right, right.
So you don't have to pay for AOL if you're not using their dial-up access.
Yeah, it's and you know what? I'm not. A lot of people make fun of folks with AOL addresses, and I'm not. Like I said in the news story, a lot of people can't afford more than that for their internet connectivity, and I get that. And I'm not dissing them in any way, shape, or form.
Although both Time Warner and Frontier have $15 a month internet plans.
Well, yes, but they may not be in an area where they can get broadband of any.
They're out in the rural areas where neither are offered.
Too far away.
And I agree with you. If you are in the city or in an area where you can get $15 a month internet. You should, because it's A, cheaper by $5 and faster by a lot. But yes, there are a lot of people for whom that's not available.
Yep.
That's the whole idea behind, what is it, Project Loon that Google is doing, where they send up balloons and are creating mesh networks everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. That's the kind of thing that people need and are actually making use of. So we'll see how that works. Time Warner, of course, has their, I forget what they call it, but it's broadband. It's Wi-Fi everywhere as well. But that's a separate kind of a thing. But yeah, there's a whole lot of people out there who are not in an area that is served by the broadband providers.
Mm-hmm. We see a lot around here, at least, lake houses. Not all of the lakes have broadband, around the whole lake. If you're right in Canandaigua, then yeah, you probably get
lucky
it.
There.
But if you're farther south,
within the city,
in the boonies,
and there are whole swaths of the Midwest that are, there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
You do satellite or you do nothing. You know, my sister-in-law lives on a ranch in Arizona. I say ranch. They have two horses and some cacti, I believe. And, but it's a beautiful little place. But
how much land, though?
Not a whole lot. Enough for the horses.
Yeah, a couple acres, maybe?
A few acres. But for here in, you know, for us, you've got, what, acres of land? Holy moly. For the other people in Arizona, it's like, can you actually get a house on that thing?
Yeah.
Can you park a car on that lot?
Yep.
But they have enough for them.
Yeah.
But they are also in the middle of nowhere. They have satellite. So they're very sparing in when they connect or don't connect.
Because you often pay by the meg
for
that. There are also some communities that have basically, you know, wireless broadcast internet. There's one in Laramie, Wyoming that I've seen interviewed a couple of times. They are microwave transmitted Wi-Fi, basically. And they have to get a cable from like two towns over to get the internet signal to be able to broadcast, because Wyoming is one of the least densely populated states. So if you want internet service, then you're almost out of luck in a lot of areas.
That was one of the big selling points originally of satellite phones.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could get connectivity in places where nobody's got a tower, nobody's got an internet connection, nobody's got anything. Half of these people don't even have phones, frankly. It's a tough thing when you're in the middle of nowhere like that.
Well, this one town that I worked for, you know, doing some computer work back in the day, and I won't mention the town's name, but they were up on this hill. And to get internet service, they had to have a satellite up there to shoot down to the hill to this other barn that they owned that could get the service. So then that way it uplinked it back to the office.
You remember that Robert Cringely article where the mountain and the telescopes and looking down the mountain to find someone that has internet access? And can I put an antenna on your roof?
Yeah.
And beam it up to my mountain home?
Yeah, that's the way that worked back in those days. And so, you know, there are those of us who live in a city or wherever that has multiple broadband connectors. You know, we have Time Warner, we have Frontier. We have
Greenlight,
of course, but we also, what's the other one? Earthlink. That's
now,
what started with
Greenlight. They're still expanding quite a bit.
I am. I have my 100 megabits per second connection. And
what's the charge on that a month?
Love it. $50 a month. I factored that in I went to retire. No cap. 100 megabits, and it never, I would say. It may well go down to 98 or 97 at some point, but I haven't noticed it.
So watching movies like and everything else.
I was watching a movie on Netflix. My daughter was binging Daredevil. My wife was watching a movie. My wife was on Castleville. My daughter was on Tumblr. And I was doing a bunch of stuff. And there was nothing, no hesitation. Oh, and I was updating my Chromebook all at once, and there was no hesitation. There was no glitching. There was nothing. I could not possibly have been happier. It was wonderful. When they come to your neighborhood, jump. Leap. Pretty amazing stuff. And that's, you know, that's the promise of broadband. That's what we expect to get.
Yeah.
So when you have, and you know, we don't get it, right? Because most people don't have an idea what 10 megabits means.
Mm-hmm. No, they
right. So when you're with four or five people in your household and everybody's trying to stream a different movie and blah, 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 you end up with a lot of glitching, and whatever your broadband connection, this is not an ad for any one of them, whatever your broadband connection, you need it to be fast enough for you to do that. And that's why, you know, whatever your broadband connection, you need to know that you know, 10 megabits, 5 megabits, 2 megabits is not a lot. This is why the government has upped the definition of broadband to 25 megabits.
Mm-hmm. And the things we're downloading and doing on the internet has changed so drastically. You know, back in the days of dial-up, you might download your mail, you might download a photo. You know, a 5-meg file would take an hour to download. You know, today we're streaming video, we're you know, playing online games, and so we're downloading 100 gig files, and that takes an hour.
How much time do people spend on YouTube, on Crackle, Hulu, on Netflix? And that's all huge video files.
Yeah, if you can go into your system settings, I know on the Mac it's in Activity Monitor. It's probably something similar in Windows. You can look at how much data your computer has passed.
Right.
And if you have a router capable of it, you can see all the data in your house and see how much it's passed. Time Warner has a global meter that you can look at too.
Right.
And so, you know, my computer, since I just rebooted it like an hour ago, I've passed 3 gigabytes of data.
Just here,
because I'm streaming. Well, I'm streaming video. Yeah,
right, you're streaming video.
Yeah, and so it's very easy to rack up, you know, huge amounts of data because of the things we're doing. We're all watching video online, and if you have two or three people at home watching different video, then that's even more bandwidth being used. And so it's never fast enough and never big enough.
Right. And that's, of course, why you get your mobile data package and they give you a whole 3 gigabytes.
For the whole month.
For the month. I think that's... Who are you kidding? On the one hand, they want us to do all this streaming and thinging and everything else. And on the other hand, you're paying ridiculous amounts of money for those data. So... of course, Google now has this thing called Fi, which you should probably read up on. It's pretty cool, and it's fairly inexpensive. All right, do we have time to go to the phone? We can at least get the question in. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit. Hiya, Victor. What's up?
Hi, guys. I've got Carbonite right now as my primary cloud backup service, and I haven't really had to use it because my computer hasn't crashed, but I'm paranoid. So,
good for you.
Overkill to get another cloud service to run in conjunction with it, or a external hard drive, or do you think Carbonite, with your reputation, is going to be okay?
Well, here's my feeling, because I'm with you, Victor. I'm are you outdoors, or are you just... Is this?
Yeah, I'm taking my walk, yeah.
Oh, okay. Dave, you might want to pot him down while we talk, because the wind is... All right. So, Victor, we potted you down because of the wind, so I'm just going to talk for a minute, and then we'll pot you back up so you can object. So you can do a rebuttal. So you can reserve the right to cross-examine. Here's my feeling about backups. They really should be in at least 2, if not 3 stages. There should be immediate backups, so you have a backup that's always connected to your computer, whether it's a separate hard drive or a USB hard drive or something along that line. Then there should be an off-site backup, and Carbonite is that, right? So if just you lose a file or you glitch something or you accidentally delete something or whatever, you can immediately restore it from your on-site backup. But if you have a disaster at home, you want to have something out there somewhere that would be Carbonite, which would give you the ability to restore everything, even if there's a catastrophe. Now, in between those is something called near-site backup, which might be a hard drive on your network, but not on your computer. So if your computer dies, you've still got 2 backups, Carbonite and that network thing. Now, if God forbid your house catches fire or whatever, you've only got the 1 left. But that's a start. Stay on the line, Victor, and we'll come right back to you after we take this brief pause. It's 39 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we still have Victor from Irondequoit on the line. Did any of that make sense, Victor?
It made a lot of sense. I'm very paranoid about losing my stuff. You know, I mean, I save everything. I buy something on Amazon. I have a folder for Amazon. I mean, whatever I do, I have a I save it.
But yep.
It's not really guaranteed. And this morning, I was updating my RoboForm, and they offered a service similar to Carbonite called GoodSync, and that was making me think, you know, maybe two backup services might be better. And that's why I called.
Well, two backup services are okay. I don't know if I go with two cloud backup services.
Yeah.
The backing up to the cloud is slow. Restoring from the cloud is really slow because of internet speeds. Having a local hard drive for your backup generally makes a lot of sense. And we see people will do multiple physical hard drives and then, you know, take one to the garage, take one to a safety deposit box, take one to work if your work allows it. And so you have multiple copies in different locations. Having an internet backup service is also good because then it gets you that, you know, offline, and most of them allow you web access. So if you're not at home and you need a file, you can log into your backup service and get your file too.
Right, and that's yeah. And that's why I say on-site, near-site, off-site.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get an external hard drive, and they'll be my other backup.
Yep.
There you
and,
go.
And yeah, $100 backup drive.
You're yep. welcome, Victor. Thank you.
$100 backup drive versus thousands of dollars in recovery attempt.
Right, right.
recovery right. attempt.
Right, and it's always just an attempt. You never know if you're actually going to make it. But yeah, to reiterate, on-site backup would be a disk connected to your computer all the time, whether it's a second internal hard drive or a hard drive on a USB connected hard drive or whatever. A near-site backup might be a drive that you connect to your network, back up everything to it, and then like maybe keep it in the car in the trunk. Although in this weather, maybe you don't want to do that. And then off-site backup, of course, would be Carbonite or some other solution that you have out in the cloud somewhere. Doing it the other way works, too. For example, I almost exclusively these days use Google Drive to save my data. And I know they back that up about a million different ways. But even so, I use Google Takeout to back up all of my data to a zip file. And then I have multiple copies of that zip file. So I have that not only restorable, but also just available offline anytime I want it. I can make that happen. So, and there are all kinds of utilities that you can either buy or just download for free that will do that automatically if you like.
And using a data syncing service like Google Drive or Dropbox or Microsoft OneDrive, Apple's iCloud Drive, everyone has a cloud drive these days.
Right.
That's really convenient because if you have multiple devices, computers, phones, and tablets, your important documents will sync between them, and so you can always get to your document no matter what device you're on. Now, most of them only give you a few gigabytes for free, and if you have a lot of space, then you have to pay a lot of money for them. So it's generally not useful as a backup service.
How much is a lot of money?
Well,
I mean, it depends on what, big, it is, right. what your data are.
One of the big things is photos. Apple now has right. the iCloud photo library. A lot of people have multi-hundred gigabyte photo libraries. And so we're typically seeing $20 a month for a terabyte of photo storage, which can sound like a lot. But for documents, 2 or 3 megs is often two or three gigs is often enough because documents are relatively small.
Right.
It's your photos that are big, and Google Drive actually gives you 15 gigabytes of combined mail and file space, which is among the biggest of the free services. Flickr gives you 1 terabyte of free photo service, so that's where I've started putting my photos because that's enough for free. And it's interesting to see how the different cloud storage services have changed their pricing as more and more companies are joining it and as the big companies, Google and Microsoft and Apple, are lowering their prices.
Right. Google used to charge $50 a month for a terabyte of storage.
Yep.
Now they charge 10.
Yeah.
$10 a month for a terabyte of storage.
Space is getting cheap. Very cheap.
Yeah, it really is.
And there's no excuse, because you can set it up to have it automatically do it. So you set it up for a time when you're sitting down and off to dinner, Or, you know, if you...
Your first backup is going to take forever.
Yeah. But then the incremental
ones...
And
if you have a data cap on your internet service, do not do internet backups.
Right. Absolutely
true. It will suck your month's data in the first day.
Absolutely true. But for those of you who do not have a cap, it's a great way to do it. And in fact, for those of you who do not have a cap and have multiple backups, you're even better off. You know, almost every device, every operating system out there has a Google Drive connector. So you get a folder on your desktop that is your Google Drive. So you can then use your built-in backup, copy, Xcopy or whatever you use, rsync, whatever you use. So for $10 a month, say, you can get a terabyte of storage on Google's Drive and automate it, as Steve said, have it happen while you're at lunch or if you leave your machine on all the time, have it happen at 2 in the morning.
Yeah, just turn off the monitor and let it do it behind the scenes. You won't even know it, and it's very painless.
Yep.
One other thing we should bring up, sort of a totally different subject, especially for you two gentlemen. What's tomorrow?
Tomorrow's a big day. Tomorrow is Mother's Day. For those of you who have completely forgotten it, it's not too late.
Although it'll be expensive for Sunday delivery.
Or you stop at a florist or wherever and pick up some flowers. Let me tell you right now, flowers. It sounds trite. It sounds kind of lame. But you know what? And it's very much appreciated by most people.
And what I've been doing and thinking lately is instead of cut flowers, which die in a few days, get a nice potted plant. And then it will last for a while.
Yeah.
Depending on your greenness of your thumb.
Right, exactly.
But what was that Johnny Fever quote? I've cut off the earth's lung.
Right. He shows up at Lonnie Anderson, whatever the character name was, with a Christmas tree, and he says, "In honor of the birth of our Savior, I ripped the lungs out of a living plant, a living creature, and brought it to you." Yeah. And it's too late now, but I tend to do is I always have them delivered on Friday at work so that she can lord it over the other ladies.
Mm-hmm. You're the one.
Yes!
Jerk.
I am that one. All right.
Yep. One last tip. Don't plan on going out to dinner tomorrow because everyone else has, and there'll be three-hour waits.
Yeah.
Or call, get reservations.
Unless
sometimes
you've already made reservations.
You can tell them what time and you sign up for a slot. Yeah.
Well, what we always do is I plan it ahead with my wife. We go out either the weekend before or the weekend after for dinner. Yep. That's a deal. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Scott from Buffalo, New York. Hiya, Scott. What's up?
I'm wondering what's free for backup. I have a Dropbox account, and I'm assuming I can back up stuff there.
Well, your Dropbox files are stored at Dropbox's servers somewhere, and the assumption is they're also backed up. But that's more of a syncing service. So if you accidentally or on purpose delete a file from your Dropbox, it's deleted from Dropbox. They do have an archiving service. I think you have to subscribe for that, though. So it will keep files when they're deleted. But syncing your data with a cloud service is good, but if you delete a file or you change a file and want to go back to the old version, most of those syncing services don't have versioning. So you can't get to the previous version. So that's one way where an archived backup is handy. So you can go to yesterday's backup, you know, last week's backup, and see what the file was then.
Yeah. All right. Very good. At $10 a month, I guess it's not very expensive anyway.
No, it really isn't. You know, there are a lot of free ones, but they offer 2 gig or 5 gig or, you know, there are very few that offer, as Steve said, 15 gig like Google does or $10 a month for a terabyte of storage. And again, most people don't need anywhere near a terabyte of storage until they start storing pictures.
Right.
Because
I'm
15...
Maybe I need... 100 megabytes.
Right.
But I guess with pictures, it could get worse.
Yeah. You need that terabyte for that. But when it comes to documents, for example, if you need 100 gigabytes, that's $2 a month.
Mm-hmm.
From Google. That's you know, depending on what it is you're storing. I mean, if you've got a lifetime of, oh, let's just off the top of my head talk about mathematical documents.
That's right.
Yeah. is $2 a month a lot of money? No. Not when you're talking about storing your heritage, essentially. You know, it's not a bad, it's for, that's that 100 gigabytes, and that, you know, is $2 a month. Again, when you start storing those, it used to be we kept the negatives, right, in a fairly safe place. Maybe, you know, if it was really important, people kept them in their safe deposit boxes. You could always make more prints from them. We don't have those anymore. So paying $10 a month for a terabyte of online storage, not a lot of money.
Not a lot of money.
So, I look at that stuff all the time. And like I said, just about every operating system has a Google Drive connector of some sort that essentially simulates a folder on your hard drive.
And Dropbox and OneDrive and Box.net. And pretty much all of the cloud services will do Mac, Windows, and Android and iOS.
Right.
It's in their best interest to have clients for every platform.
Exactly. So check them all out. Find the one that suits you best. Right now, I think the least expensive one is Apple, but prices change all the time. So check, not Apple, Google.
Yeah.
So check them out Dropbox, and see which one makes you happiest.
Dropbox annually is $100 a year, which is
slightly less
than $10 a month for a terabyte. Yeah.
What about iCloud? Is that different?
It's same concept from Apple. So that's Apple's cloud service. Prior to OS X Yosemite, iCloud was mostly used for syncing contacts and calendars between your Macs and your iDevices. But with 10.10 and iOS 8.3, they've opened up something called iCloud Drive, where you can now put any type of file on your drive. In fact, if you remember the old iDisk from previous Apple services, it's the same concept. You now have an iCloud Drive. You can put any file on it you want. You get 5 gigabytes free. And you can pay for more storage if you want. They have a 20 gigabyte, which is a 99 cents a month. That's a pretty decent price. Or they're up to a terabyte, which is $20 a month. So at the low end, Apple's a little cheaper. At the high end, it may be a little more expensive. So you check the prices on the different services and see how much you might need.
It is a special app for iCloud on my Mac. Folder, I mean.
It's the iCloud Drive folder will be created if you turn on iCloud Drive in System 10.10 in your system preferences.
Great.
And then you also can turn it on your iOS with iOS 8.2, I think it was. So the iCloud would store like your Apple Pages files. And sync that between your Mac and your iPad. Now with the full iCloud Drive, you can store any document from any program.
Thank you. Great.
Yep.
All right, excellent. Thanks. And again, you know, backing up, there's nothing that breaks my heart more than somebody coming and saying, my computer is screwed up and blah, blah, blah. And I say, well, we'll get your stuff back from your backup then. And they say, no, I don't have a backup.
Or my backup
I hear
is
that a
6
lot,
months
yeah.
old.
I meant to do that.
Or I've been meaning to do that. So here's your homework for today. Not even for this week. For right now, while you're sitting in front of your computer, as many of you do, I know, make a backup. Whether you back up to an online service or another drive, or you've got a thumb drive that'll hold everything. I don't care how you do it. Make a backup of your important documents. Make a backup of your pictures if you've got enough storage space somewhere else. Have a second or third or fifth or tenth backup available to you as quickly as possible and as easily as possible. If you've got something, if you've got Linux, then you've got rsync. If you've got a Mac,
Time Machine. Which I think is based on rsync.
right, which is, I know.
Yeah.
And if you've got Windows You've got X copy and all kinds of stuff. So make sure you're making those backups. In the meantime, we're going to take a slightly longer break. You frittered away an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But because you're a slow learner, you'll get a chance to do it again on the other side of this break. We'll be back very shortly with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's right here on the truly great and solely member-supported. Did you hear what I said there? Member-supported. Jazz 90.1. Stay tuned. We'll see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. Shockingly, it's Soundbites. Who knew?
Yeah, really. 25 years later.
Who knew? Exactly. Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Well, Microsoft's newest web browser will be called Microsoft Edge, providing a definitive name for the code named Project Spartan.
I like Spartan.
I like Spartan, too, except that kind of implies that it's less feature-rich.
It's not full of crap.
Well, we don't know that. We just know it's not feature-rich.
Ah.
Speaking at Microsoft's annual Build Developers Conference, Microsoft Corporate Vice President of Operating Systems Joe Belfiore explained that all Windows 10 devices will ship with the new browser, eventually replacing Internet Explorer for good. And RIP Internet Explorer. Edge is significantly faster than its predecessor. Microsoft says three times faster. And includes a built-in notation tool, further integration with digital assistant Cortana, to offer more personalized results and actions, and a reading mode. For us, the name refers to the idea of being on the edge of consuming and creating, he added. It refers to the developer notion of being closest to the modern capabilities of the web. Edge will also be capable of supporting Chrome and Firefox extensions, which is very interesting, allowing developers to carry their favorite plugins to the new browser. Microsoft's Alex Kipman, inventor of the Kinect motion camera for Xbox and RIT graduate, demonstrated how Windows 10 apps would run on HoloLens, the company's augmented reality holographic headset. Announced earlier this year, HoloLens beams light into the wearer's eyes to create the illusion of a 3D hologram within the surrounding physical environment. Kipman confirmed all existing Windows 10 apps would be compatible with the headset and announce the Windows holographic platform for developers to create their own apps. The cost and eventual availability of HoloLens remains unknown, though hundreds of demo kits were available for testing at the conference. The company also announced a new Windows Store offering new features, improved discoverability, better payment options, and a business store portal. So, are you looking forward to Microsoft Edge and indeed Windows 10? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
It's so sharp it will cut you.
It's so sharp it'll cut you. You know, you think to yourself, it's a browser. How cool can it possibly be? But it is the browser where we're doing everything nowadays. Everything. With HTML5, you can play games. You can search for Google the phrase Wolfenstein 3D HTML5 and discover that you can play Castle Wolfenstein on your browser. That's the one that AU won, the second one.
From Australia?
Yeah, it's a bigger screen. It's the same thing. It's a bigger screen. Yeah, the one from that one. It's pretty amazing, actually. It's the full, I guess not. That's not who.
That's H-U.
Oh, that's being blocked. That's why. But it's kind of amazing. You can play games. There's all kinds. If you search HTML5 games, you'll see all kinds of stuff. We do our documents and spreadsheets and presentations through the web. We do everything through the web these days. So, and that's, of course, the whole idea behind Chromebooks. They're basically a web browser in a box, and Chrome boxes and all of that stuff, Chrome sticks. And so what you end up with is a full experience, even though you have only a browser. And one of the things that Microsoft has discovered over the years is that Internet Explorer was woefully behind. It was horribly slow, didn't do half the stuff well, barely implemented HTML5, and certainly couldn't do really cool things like Castle Wolfenstein. And so they felt the need to update. But of course, Internet Explorer had such a bad name and such a bad rep that it was easier for them to rewrite it from the ground up and add a whole new name to it and make it an entirely different thing. So, it was pretty cool. A pretty cool deal all the way around. And we should see a significantly improved Microsoft Edge experience, web-based experience with this stuff. I'm very excited, actually, to see it because, like I said, I'm a Chrome guy from way back. I have a Chromebook, blah, 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 blah. But every time something new comes out, the other browser people update their products to at least match the capabilities of whoever's on top. So if it turns out that Edge is better than Chrome, Firefox, or bless you, Safari, then we'll see those, bless you, we'll see those update more.
They tend to go in cycles where each one looks at what the other ones did and then makes it better in their version, and then they leapfrog each other, and the last one gets better, and then the next one's better of the other one, and it's hard to keep up. Just pick one and stick with it, usually.
Yeah, exactly. Well, right. But for the people who have never explored any browser beyond the one that came with their computer, then the ability to update that to something approaching a modern browser is a very, very good thing. So no longer do the people running a Microsoft browser need to feel like they're somewhere in the back of the pack.
And for those of you that didn't know that there were other browsers you could get to the internet with, there are several you can try.
Yeah, and who was it? I think it was right around last fall. We had a couple of callers, over the course of a month call, said, tech support said, no, I have to use that one. It's like,
It's the one that tech support knows.
Yeah, but does it mean that, you can have Internet Explorer and, a couple of Chrome and Firefox sitting on your desktop and use whichever one you want depending on what you're doing.
Yeah, you have to use it when you call them, but you don't have to use it all the time.
So, or Midori or Dolphin. I mean, there are dozens of browsers out there.
Well, I remember one specifically, they said, if I put anything else on there, they won't support it. I go, wrong.
Well, they won't support that other browser. They only support their own.
Yeah, right.
So if you put on Chrome, you get support from Google.
But it's all in their wording, though.
Yeah.
That they sat there and, convinced them that, I don't know whether they were getting kickbacks or anything else, encouraging folks to only stay with that one particular browser.
Support doesn't mean it won't work. That means they won't answer your questions.
Well, and that's
what we're here for.
Right, exactly. Yeah. We don't care what you use. We don't like it. I mean,
oops.
So, yeah, but, you know, that's part of it. If you're on tech support, you have a very limited number of things that you actually support. And it's to your best interest to make sure that your customers stay with those things. Otherwise, you end up having to say, I don't know.
Yeah, so it's the support issue is, you know, someone calls in with a question, and if you have to know 27 different browsers to answer that question, that's difficult. That's one of the reasons why we ask here, which browser are you using? You know, which operating system are you using? Between the three of us, we know, you know, maybe 18 different browsers.
For the questions that I answer in the newspaper, if someone doesn't tell me exactly what operating system or browser or whatever is needed that they're using, I have two choices. I can either not answer the question, or I can answer the question for every single browser or every single operating system. Honestly, there are times I just don't have that much space.
Yep.
And so those questions go by the wayside. And the same thing is true here. When you call us, we need to know what operating system you're running and any particulars about the specific program that you're using. So if it's a browser, which one? And if you know the version number, oh my gosh, that's even better. Many people don't know what version of something they're running. Most people know whether they're running Windows 7 or 8 or 10 because it's kind of thrown in your face every time. But most other people don't know much beyond that. I have a problem when
And most of the time you don't have to. But when you're calling tech support, it really helps them to know what you're running.
Right. I have a different problem, which is that when I talk to people about Linux, they're always saying, I'm running Vivacious Vol or whatever the hell the thing
code
is.
Code names or numbers. I can remember one or the other, but usually not both.
I remember the numbers. 1504 came out in April of 2015. It's the latest version. I can remember the numbers. I don't remember the names. So that's a problem. But going back to backups, one thing I want to caution most people about is actually using Microsoft's backup and restore program. In every version of Microsoft's products, the backup program has worked perfectly. The restore program has not. And so one without the other isn't really much. So my suggestion is that you use a different program. Well, we don't know what Windows 10 is going to look like, but I've seen just heartbreaking horror stories with Windows, every version up to and including 8. So, again, how much of that is the end user? Well, when it's one story or two stories, then you think it's probably the end user. When it's 30 or 40 or 80 stories, the likelihood is less. So, get yourself something along the lines of, you know, there are many good online backup solutions. There are many good local backup solutions. Many of them are free. Bacula and things like that.
Cobian, wasn't that a good one for a while?
Cobian is excellent. Yeah. There's a bunch of them out there. And so I don't care what you use, but use something that's automated. Because let's face it, you're no better than everybody else on earth when it comes to backing up, and you know it. You'll skip a day here, you'll skip a day there, and that's exactly the day you're going to need it, and you know it is. So make sure you have an automated backup so no matter what happens, that backup continues to happen whether or not you remember to do it yourself. That's a nice thing about Time Machine. You can set it up to do that automatically. It's a nice thing about rsync along with Crontab.
It's hard not to set it automatically.
Yeah, right. rsync and Crontab, where you can do that automatically. Windows has the at command and xcopy, if you know how to use those. Plus, of course, there's things like Carbonite and Cobian.
There's one called CrashPlan, which is kind of interesting.
CrashPlan is nice.
They have a free service where you back up to a buddy's computer. And they can back up to your computer. So it's off-site, and presumably you trust your buddy. Because that excuse me, it's one of the big things with online backups is you kind of have to trust them at the other end. Is your data encrypted before it gets to them? And what will they do with your data if, you know, if the police come and ask for it? And so it's kind of nice with CrashPlan. You know, your buddy can set aside some of their hard drive space for you, and you can set aside some of their of yours for them. I think they also offer. We talked about the problem of your first backup, where it's backing up, you know, multiple gigabytes on your computer. You can send them a hard drive, that you back up locally in an hour, and then that becomes your first backup online, so it doesn't take forever overnight. Or over several nights.
One of the students who worked for me had another guy's computer in his dorm room because he was on, RIT's network, which is super fast. And he could, the guy backed it up, backed up his main machine, sent him the computer plug in, and then he did incremental backups from there. It was really kind of nice. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Nick, you. 19 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz, 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz, 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Ray from Pittsford, New York, on the line. Welcome, Ray. What's up?
Hi. The name's Roy.
Oh, Roy. Sorry.
Okay.
I'm sure that's me.
Here's a problem. It might be tough, but that's what you're there for, I guess. About a month ago, all of a sudden, as they say, I started getting a lockup on my keyboard and my mouse. Now, I'm running Windows 7 Pro, and the keyboard and the mouse are USB. So what would happen is if I had Outlook going or whatever, all of a sudden the cursor would just freeze where it was, and the mouse and the keyboard were inactive.
Right.
Now, whatever was running in the background, or like Outlook, for example, they would continue to receive programs, or if I was watching a video, the video would continue to come in. So it just seemed to be the keyboard and mouse.
Right.
And it's been going on for over a month now.
All right, let me ask you a question. If you were to unplug the keyboard and mouse from the USB ports they're in, and put them in different USB ports, do they come back?
You mean without rebooting or anything
yes.
like that? Actually, I haven't tried it.
You should. I actually have that problem on one of my machines myself. It's caused by a bad driver. And the easiest way to update it is to update the firmware on the motherboard. Now, the way you do that, of course, I can't tell you because I don't know what your motherboard is. But in the manual for the motherboard, it should tell you how to do that.
I'm running a little Dell computer,
And I get that. So it might be time to make a call and bring it to somebody or have them come to your home. But that's what it's going to actually take. Unfortunately, there's no shortcut for this.
Do you have other USB devices like a printer or a scanner?
Yeah, they seem to work okay.
Try swapping ports. Put the keyboard and mouse into the port the printer and scanner are in.
I should try that. I haven't done that.
Yeah, it might be a bad port, which is a hardware problem.
Right.
Sometimes just unplugging all your USB, and then when you plug it back in again, Windows redetects it. Maybe it will update the driver for you. If you're lucky.
Well, I have done that, but not with the power going on. Like you said, I just wiggled it to make sure that the contacts were clean and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what you were suggesting.
I'm suggesting you actually make it go to another. You put it in the other USB port
and
entirely.
USB is one of the only connectors you can unplug while the power is on.
Right.
Well, I can try that. Yeah. Okay, I got that marked down. The other interesting thing I found out in the process of doing that is that I would reboot the PC, and then it would start up okay, and everything was fine. It would go
yes.
on until the next time. But
yeah.
I found out that on the Dell, 8300, I think it is, that if I just push the on-off button for about a second instead of the usual 5 seconds,
yeah,
it apparently went into some kind of a hibernate or sleep mode or something like that.
Yep, that's fairly common.
Which was not really an option on my start button. It only has like a hibernate button or something like that. I forget.
Right.
It has only one of them, but not both of them.
Right.
So apparently that allows it to come back a lot faster. It doesn't go through all the rebooting process and everything like that.
Right. When you hibernate or sleep, what it does is it takes the contents of memory, saves it to a space on the hard drive, and then when you come out of that, it takes it off yeah. the hard drive, puts it back in memory, and starts you up. So it actually happens much faster.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that you could use the button for that.
Yeah.
That's often a setting in BIOS, whether you want the power button to put it to sleep as well as to turn it on.
Right. So one of the things that you have to be aware of for everybody listening is that that's not a way to fix. There are some problems that can only be fixed by real rebooting.
Right.
Hibernating doesn't do that. In this particular case, it's enough to fix your problem, Roy, but it's not enough, for example, if you've got a memory leak or that sort of thing. It won't fix that at all.
No, it does bring back the keyboard and the mouse, but then it can happen again.
Right.
Sometimes it happens once a day. I'm retired, so I spend a fair amount of time on it.
Mm-hmm.
It happens once a day. Sometimes it happens up to 5 times a day. I've never lost any information, though, which is good.
Yep.
It may be a bad USB device. Maybe the keyboard is bad or the mouse is bad and takes out the other one.
That's certainly a possibility
as
well.
If one takes out the other, it's possible, I suppose. But they both seem to fail at the same time.
Right.
Okay. Well, I know it's a tough problem without fiddling around.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
I haven't been able to find the secret. I did try reloading the drivers and the USB drivers. That didn't seem to fix the problem. One thing I do notice, this may be a clue for you people, if you have a minute. My cursor, I'm looking at my cursor right now on the PC. I just recently rebooted, and the cursor is a little arrow, and it just sits there. And normally it sits there for a long time. But then, when it gets busy, so to speak, it'll sit there for about 5 seconds or 10 seconds, and then the little ring will pop up for a quarter of a second or something like that, as if it's trying to go out and do something else. My son suggested I might have too many things running. But the things that are running would probably be in the background. They're not right. actual applications.
How much memory does the computer have?
12 gigs.
Yeah, you
that no. should be enough.
It's not going to be that. It's as Steve said. It could be the firmware in the BIOS. As Steve said, it could be a bad device. If you've got another mouse, you could replace it and see if that solves the problem. Then replace the keyboard, see if that solves the problem, et cetera, et cetera. But the truth is that. It's a fairly long, involved process, but if you have the hardware already, it doesn't cost you anything to spend the time.
Yeah, I don't have all that hard. This is the first one I've had that has USB
right.
accessories. Everything else is PS2 that I have around here.
Yep.
So that doesn't help. Well, those are the clues, and the things that are in the background might be something like, you mentioned it before, the Google
yep.
Plus, and Dropbox and things like that are running. And some of those, I think, have things that are running all the time in the background, but they never show up on the task manager.
Right.
Yeah, sometimes you have to go to the processes tab. It's there's a technical difference, which of course is the best kind of difference.
Yeah.
Between applications and processes.
Yeah,
and
right.
So you might have an application, you know, Outlook, and you might have 50 different processes that are all doing their own little things behind the scene.
Well, most of those I don't understand. I have about 165
Nobody does.
of those running.
Yep.
Yeah, we tell people never look at that tab because people just get crazed when they see all that stuff.
Well,
going
I look
on
at it
there.
A lot because that's, you know, like you say, that's the thing to look at.
I have 1,284 threads running out of 262 processes.
Nice.
On my computer. And I'm only streaming video and recording audio and
web surfing. Well, okay, so that's a lot more.
Yeah.
Like I said, I have 165 or something like that. And I was thinking that maybe some of those are running in the background, or maybe some of these things like Dropbox or...
Well, yep. All of those things will be... Any of those processes that are running in the background. So, yes, they are running back there, but as to which one could be involved in this nonsense...
You could try a safe boot, which turns off all but the very core drivers and processes, and see if the same thing happens there. But then,
right,
then you're
does,
really limited in what you can do with
the
computer.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, that would be a one of those not the full boot. What do you call it?
Safe boot.
Yeah, you're booting up. excuse me, in safe mode when you're booting up. If you got Windows 7, you just hold down the F8 key. If you got Windows 8, you have to hold down the Control F8 key.
I thought it was Shift F8.
Is it Shift or Control? I thought it was Control.
They changed it, of course.
Yeah. But it's a combination. Why they had to add more complexity to it is definitely beyond me.
Because we all knew the old one.
Yeah, F8 was standard.
Yeah.
You kept hitting the F8 key as it was booting up, and you would get a menu, and the first one was safe mode. Then you could also get safe mode with networking.
Right.
Or you'd go to command prompt. There was a list of like 12 items that you could pick from. And
True.
Safe mode was always the best one to go to if you were having issues, because you could go in there and it just literally loads the bare essentials. Video is huge on it, so if you had nice small icons, all of a sudden they look like they're on steroids because they're four times the normal size. But you can get in there and you can check on things that are running and disable stuff that maybe you don't want running.
Okay, well, I could try safe boot.
Yeah.
Would not load any of the extensions or...
Correct, right.
It's just the core
literally
services.
bare essentials. And then you could go into, once you get in there, go to the start button and go into MS Config. MS Config will open up a window, and one of the tabs there is Startup. And in the Startup, you can turn off quite a bit of that stuff so it doesn't boot. You know, those things when they're being loaded because...
But it's
like,
hard to know what they all do.
Yeah. For the most part, though, I haven't seen too many that you can't turn off. And once you start an application, it'll start it then. Say, like, quite often it'll load iTunes. No, I don't need that running constantly in the background.
It's waiting to see if you're going to plug your iPod in.
Well, you know what? When I do it, it'll do it. They're smart enough. They're smart devices, and they can do that. I also don't need to have, say... CD burner software running in the background, double-checking to see if I want to burn anything, or my sound system. When I open those applications, they will normally start up and load the specific drivers and everything else that it needs. So that's why I'm saying 90% of the stuff in that startup you can pretty much do away with, except for your antivirus and spyware software.
Right.
Most of those... would not start up in the safe mode?
They won't. No, nothing gets loaded in safe mode. Not even your antivirus software doesn't even get loaded.
Okay. Okay, well, that's a thought.
Okay.
It'll narrow it down somewhat, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll call in next week.
There you go.
Perfect.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thanks for your input.
Thank you, Roy.
Yeah, sometimes that's the troubleshooting. You try one thing, if it doesn't work, you try the next thing, if it doesn't work, you try the next thing, if it doesn't work.
Well, if you're uncomfortable, that's the other thing, though. You can uncheck a few things, start it up in regular mode, see if it works. If you're still having an issue, reboot it, go back into safe mode, uninstall, you know, uncheck a few more items, and try that. Like I say, it's a process of elimination, and sometimes us through tech support, we can spend a good part of a day going through that
process.
And here's a word of advice. As you uncheck things, write down what you unchecked. Because in the moment of discovering what went wrong and concentrating on that, I can't tell you how many people have called me and said, yeah, I unchecked some stuff. I knew what it was before, but now I don't remember. Write it down. How hard is that?
They still make paper.
Or take a screenshot. And when you get an error message, take a screenshot. Because yeah. That's one thing. I got an error. Okay, what was there? Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah.
Well, it helps to know the error message.
Just a little.
On the Mac, it's Command-Shift-3, takes a picture of the whole screen. On Windows, it's a little more annoying. You hit the print screen button, and it puts an picture on your clipboard, so then right. You have to open
paint you open up and paint paste and it in.
Why can't it just save a file? That would be too easy.
Yeah. On Linux, you can just save the file. And I don't remember what it is.
And CRS.
Chrome is a little different, and...
Yeah, they're all a little different.
There's actually Mac has a whole bunch of different ways to take a screenshot. The Command Shift 3 is the entire screen, and you actually hear a camera shutter click because that's sort of. And actually, if you don't know how to do it on your computer, use your camera, your camera phone, take a picture of the screen. Command Shift 4 lets you take a region. You can do a window. You can do a dialog box. You can do a menu. Back in the olden days when the screen was everything.
And it took a screenshot, and it saved it to, looks like it saved it to downloads. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, it's the longest running computer show in the known universe, and it's still Soundbites, right here on solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And do we have somebody on the line?
No.
No. Okay, then. Alrighty, let's...
Did you get a call that I didn't get?
Well, I see something written down over there. Oh, it's scribbled off, too.
Yeah, it's scribbled off.
Yeah, this is Users Group Week. The Apple Cider meeting is this Wednesday, the 13th, at 7 o'clock at East High School. We're going to be having June Glazer from the TechAge Learning Center talking about finding and trusting medical information on the Internet. I'm going to be doing a presentation on Apple's new Photos app, which replaces iPhoto and Aperture, and surprised a lot of people because they forgot Apple said they were going to do this a year ago. we're also going to be showing off an Apple Watch, and I'm checking with Todd to make sure it actually came in. He was sure it was going to be in time, but I probably should make sure. So it should be an interesting meeting this coming Wednesday, 7 o'clock at East High.
Perfect. And for those of you who continue to use Microsoft Office, the Microsoft Office 2016 preview has been made available for download on Monday for Office 365 subscribers with Pro Plus as part of their subscription, also for non-subscribers and both home and enterprise users. So essentially, everybody. The Redmond Giant has promised real-time editing, co-authoring, in Office 2016 in the future versions of the software, adding it for the first time to its apps, but the feature is not available just yet. I use it constantly in Google Docs, constantly, and it's great. Microsoft confirmed this feature will be first enabled in Word, while PowerPoint and Excel will follow suit soon after. As a long-term plan, Microsoft also has plans to enable the co-authoring feature in the Android and iOS apps. The public preview of Office 2016 is supported by Windows 7, 8, and 10, laptops, PCs, tablets, but it requires users to uninstall Office 2013 because both versions cannot be on the same machine. Microsoft has plans to update the public preview frequently before the final version is actually made available commercially in the fall of 2015. The first preview build was made available to IT professionals and developers in March. Those who have been testing the new version for Office since then have stated that there are very few brand new features. That said, Microsoft is tooting its horn about cloud connectivity enhancements in Office 2016. The new features in Office 2016 preview also include navigation support in the form of Tell Me, integration with Power BI, their critical enterprise BI tool, Business Intelligence, for those of you who are pondering, and more lockdown and rights management capabilities. Microsoft's talked before about making Universal Office apps for mobile devices, which will run near identical code as their desktop counterparts. Microsoft has stated that the apps have been designed ground up for touchscreen devices, which is what got them into so much trouble with Windows 8. So we'll see where that takes us. So are you looking forward to a new version of Office? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-04.
What's the price tag on that, though?
The preview is currently free. The Mac we don't know yet. The Mac preview of 2016 was released a couple of months ago, so that might mean that Microsoft is now coinciding the releases. Office for Mac and Office for Windows will come out at the same time, hopefully with feature parity, because that's always been, you know, the leapfrog there. We've got 2011 for Mac and 2013 for Windows adds features.
Well, but when 2011 for Mac came out, interested in making Macs. On a power with
apparently, the Mac business unit, what was the quote? They make more money per unit sold than they do on the Windows version of Office, because they sell more copies of the Windows version, and there's more tech support needed for the Windows version. And Microsoft does something neat. When someone calls in for tech support, the feature that they need tech support on is charged. The development team that wrote that feature is charged back the tech support cost. So that they'll make it better next time. There was a running joke in Microsoft about the mail merge couch, that if someone called in with a mail merge question, you could go lay on the couch for 45 minutes, because that's how long it would take you to talk someone through how to do a mail merge.
I'm sorry. Google Docs, free.
It does everything I want to do. There are add-ons. A friend of mine found a great add-on for... he needs mail merge, and he found a great add-on for mail merge written by a couple of teachers who also needed mail merge and were sick and tired of crappy mail merge. So they wrote one. He's very happy with it. I don't use mail merge myself. I don't have the
name
in my head, but
I'm wondering now how many people do mail merge anyway, because that takes a physical piece of paper and you do bulk mailing.
Well, you can turn it into PDFs and
right. Yeah, it's more likely now they're doing email merge.
Right,
which is a lot easier. You just type a group name in and it sends it to everyone.
Right, right.
Yeah, embed the document into that and just send it.
Christmas card lists are probably still
paper's dead, man.
Done. Yeah,
but I mean, you know, you sit there and use
yes, it
Google
is.
Docs.
It died as soon as they cut the tree down.
That's why they call it dead tree versions.
Yeah,
and then turn around and I use Google Drive. For the documents in that that I really need, I mean, any key photos and all that, I've got those backed up religiously on two different hard drives, you know, that are set aside so I don't have any worries about, you know, especially the cherished ones that I have. But documents and everything else fits right up on Google Drive, no problem. It's there, and no matter where I am, matter of fact, if I've got my tablet with the Google Drive, I can sit there and pull it up.
Yep.
And I've even got some a few photos there, you know, that I can pull up if I want to show somebody. Oh, wait a minute, I can show you this and pull up my tablet and, oh, how'd you do that? I don't have to be hooked up to my computer at home. That the flexibility.
You don't have to be hooked up anywhere because Google Docs works offline. All you have to do is set it up.
Yeah.
You go into the settings and say, work offline.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, though, is to pull something up to show somebody, you know, off the tablet or that.
Right.
Yeah. So... it's just so handy. I mean, you're the one that convinced me on that, you know.
It's a great product.
It is.
Well, we're talking Google Docs, but the reality is it's whatever online service you want, whether you're an Office 365 or Windows Live or whatever they're calling it this week.
Right.
Whether you're an iDrive. No, that's not what they call it.
iCloud Drive. iWork user, yeah.
iWork or Google Docs or Zoho Docs or whatever it is, Google Drive. Whichever one you use, it's become so convenient now. And the online versions are so powerful that writing and the automatic saving and everything else that happens when you use them. I've written, as I may have mentioned, a couple of books, getting ready to start a third one. And I write them in Google Docs, which means that whether I'm sitting in a cafe or a lunch counter or wherever I'm sitting
and
working, I can work at home. When I use my Chromebook, all my documents are there. When I go home and use my desktop, all my documents are there. If I'm out somewhere on a laptop, all my documents are there. It's so convenient and so easy and so powerful. I don't know why more people don't do it.
And the other advantage is you don't have to worry about disk space. Because if you create it in Google Docs, it doesn't count against your space.
That's the big difference between iWork and Live.com or whatever it is and Google Docs, Google Drive. If you write a document in Google Docs or Google Sheets or Google Presentations, it does not count against your quota of that 15 gig.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got well over 2,000 documents, most of them fairly long. I write books on Google Drive, and I'm using a total of 2 gig of disk space.
Yeah.
All of that is in 2 very large PDFs. All of that, 2 very large PDFs.
Can't complain about that.
Which, as soon as I'm done with this little project I'm on, those are going to go away, and then I will be using, like, Zip. That's the thing I love about Google Docs. But all of them are convenient, easy to use, simple, available pretty much everywhere. Like I said, they all work offline, so they are available everywhere, and it's a pretty good deal. I can understand that Microsoft is a little scared. They're even doing it themselves. They're undercutting their own products because they're putting their stuff out online as well.
And, how many features can you build into a word processor before you exhaust it?
Well, and how many features do those people really need?
Exactly. For the average user,
right,
it's right there in Google Docs.
Right. If you're that person, if you're, for example, Scott from Buffalo, who's writing mathematical formulas all the time, actually you can do that in Google Drive as well. But if you're that person, maybe you can't use one of the online systems. But for everybody else? Anyway, that brings us to the end of another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. We're done for another week. We'll see you in 166 hours with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. Don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so there's really no worries. And really, George can't come through the radio to get at you anyway, so you're pretty safe. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening. See you in 166 hours.